Blog Talk Radio.
Rumor spreading round in that Texas town about the shack outside the game. And you know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you wanna go to that home out on the range. They got a lot of nice girls.
Hey everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian William Manisha coming to you live every day, talking with HR with the folks that are out there doing HR. So let's get to our guest. Danielle, how are you today?
I'm great, Brian. Thanks so much for having me.
Wonderful. Well, if you would, introduce yourself to our listeners, and then we'll roll into our big question after that.
Okay, great. My name is Danielle Rupert, and I am an HR consultant. I'm in North Carolina. I've been practicing HR for about 15 years, working in consulting probably for the last five. So it's been a great ride, and I'm learning something new every day.
Well, fantastic. Well, what's currently keeping you up at night and top of mind with you?
Top of mind for me, Brian, right now has been cultural sensitivity and diversity issues that I think, you know, we talk a lot about diversity. We all understand the importance of it, but it seems to be something that we really have to work hard at. And I know here in North Carolina, just like in many places in the country, we have some steep political polarization, and I kind of see that spilling over into some of our work teams. So that's kind of keeping me up a bit. You know, we work at diversity training for our leaders, and I think it's important that we kind of drive that same sensitivity approach and that desire for inclusion down to frontline leaders as well as our general employees. So that is giving me a little bit of concern lately.
So what's how do you approach, I mean, you're an HR professional in a company somewhere, how do you approach navigating those conversations when you obviously see that it is causing, some conflict, I mean, some noticeable conflict and impact at work?
What I found that's worked well for me, for someone like me, it's kind of easy to champion diversity because I fit so neatly into many of the protected statuses. But for me, I try to look for commonality. So when I talk about the issues that we may face with race or gender or, you know, other cultural differences, I try to insert myself in it so that, you know, people don't view it as me preaching at them. But for me, if we find commonality, it's much easier to address the issues. A lot of times these conversations are very uncomfortable. You know, people don't like to talk about them. We don't like to open, you know, admit that they really exist. But it's very important that we do.
Well, what's an approach to getting people more comfortable with conversations? Because obviously, that's for me, I think a lot of people, and this was not just with like a topic, you know, such as what we're talking about, but it could be religion, politics, I mean, pick a lane. A lot of it comes down to just getting more comfortable having the conversation, right? And facilitating
right.
It so that when people, because it's an fairly emotionally charged until people get more comfortable having positions and having ways to communicate that and be willing to listen and all that stuff. So what are some suggestions on just getting people more comfortable with it, first of all?
Well, one approach that I've taken in the past, and this kind of works well with face-to-face facilitation, is if we allow the participants or whoever's in the training or in the conversation to throw their ideas out there kind of anonymously, you know, jot them down and we'll discuss them, we'll attack them. without necessarily assigning them to a particular person. People are a little more open when they can do it that way. And when you don't identify who the person is that's having the concern. So giving, just creating an environment that feels safe and not judgmental. And it does take time. It's not easy. You know, it starts really by spending time with the people and building some trust with them. But when we allow them to kind of talk openly without necessarily identifying themselves, I found that people are much more truthful. And, you know, we can really handle or deal with the issues.
So that's for the practitioner. What about for leaders in a company?
Yeah, you're right. Now, with the leaders, I'm not quite as concerned about. Well, I am concerned. I shouldn't say that. But I think we have to be much more aggressive with this, with the leaders. I'll give you an example. One issue that came up with the group I was working with, and this seems very simple, was what TV station are we going to leave the television in the break room on? They have a news channel, and they usually keep it at a news channel, but even the news channel that was selected was completely divisive. And it was very hard for the leaders to understand why that was an issue. So, you know, I had to point out, okay, you know, these are the topics that were discussed. And I had them do a total switch. And I'd love to have you look at a totally different station and look at these views. How would you feel if that was, there was no mix, you know? So just those little policies and perks that we seem to put in place that we don't often think would cause some division, they do. And with the leaders, we have to take hard looks at what the diversity plan is. Is there a plan? Are we actually trying to measure the benefit of our diversity plans? Do we want to have one? Or do leaders understand the value of it? I've worked a lot with small businesses and even startups. So for them, I'm often trying to demonstrate the value of a diversity plan and having an actual diversity strategy. Because, to be honest, that's not something that is put at the very top of, you know, their structure.
Well, I totally agree with you, Danielle, when it comes to, you know, communicating the diversity plan. Because what happens in an organization normally is everybody has a different view on what diversity means actually. And when it comes to the organization, considering, let me say, a woman for a leadership position, some of them are like, okay, there is something wrong in it, something like that. But it is if it is a part of their diversity plan and if it is well communicated and if it is adding value, then why don't we do that? So when it comes to communicating that aspect, what do you think HR professionals should do from our end in order to become a mediator between, yes, we have our organizational policies available, and then we have our leaders, but we have to bring them both together and then kind of get them as a sponsors, I mean, as a leadership sponsors to kind of let our employees know, okay, this is going to be a valuable thing for the organization. So what should our HR practitioners do?
Well, our HR practitioners should be driving that program, whatever the diversity strategy is. You know, we do need to keep hold our leaders accountable, get them in front of the employees, have them participate in community activities or social responsibility activities that have been identified, and keep that in the forefront. You know, we need to bring it up when we talk about our hiring plan, when we talk about promotions, when we talk about training opportunities. You know, even when we have opportunities for employees to represent the organization, we need to constantly put that in front of our leadership to remind them that this is really important and this is something we can do that is going to strengthen our position in the community. It's going to allow our employees to understand that we are really, really committed to this. And, you know, it will help to propel that strategy. I think when you have a strong diversity and inclusion program, you are going to build stronger teams, and it's going to be hard to get a truly engaged workforce if there's this disconnect and everybody doesn't feel that they are actually contributing and that they are valued. So if we put that in the forefront of what we're trying to do, we're going to drive engagement. You know, we're going to get some really good candidates. We're going to create opportunities where we're developing a diverse group of potential leaders. Our pipeline is going to look better, you know, and it's going to make for a stronger organization.
Great. But, Daniel, there's a hard thing is like, you know, what equal is not the same for everyone, right, when it comes to even if it is an employee or even if it is a leader and even if it is personally and professionally too. So when we talk about, you know, hire for diversity, what clicks you most, if it is internal employees or hiring from external candidates?
Personally, I think we should have internally a group of candidates that are positioned to grow with the organization. I think when we, you know, hire people, we should look to develop them so that when opportunities present themselves within the organization, we have a strong candidate pool right there. Now, there are going to be times, clearly, where you have to go outside to hire, and that's fine. And we do want to bring in new talent, so that's true. And I think it's always important that we hire the best candidate. What we want to do, though, is expand our hiring pool. We want that pool to be filled with a robust number of diverse candidates so that we can pick the absolute best candidate.
So, Danielle, what should people stop doing when they're thinking diversity and maybe they feel they're doing the right thing? What are some things that they should just stop doing one thing today? If you're building what you feel is a diverse workforce, just stop doing it because it's really counterintuitive to the right outcome.
That's a great question. And I think if we stop approaching diversity from a compliance standpoint, if we don't think about it from a compliance point of view, I think that's the best thing we can do. I really do. I think if we start thinking of diversity as a business necessity, a way to drive our businesses, then we're going to have a much different approach to it. Because a lot of times, you know, compliance, we do things, of course, because we have to. We know we have to be compliant in certain areas. But I don't think that's what we should do when we're focusing on diversity. We want to make sure that we are embracing diversity because we understand that it's going to enrich our organization, not because, oh, I have an AAP that says I need to do this or that. So I think that's the best thing that maybe HR can push diversity from a standpoint of business advantage rather than a compliance type situation.
Have you ever heard the phrase, I just can't find any diverse candidates? What do you do? What do you say? How do you feel?
So where are you looking? Where are you looking? Tell me where you look. There's got to be one. There's got to be somebody out there. Sometimes it is a struggle. But, you know, when we look to develop relationships with historically black colleges and universities, with other affinity groups in particular industries, when we, you know, even talk with our current employees about people they know, their classmates or alumni members, there are ways to find those candidates. And the thing is hunting them down. We've got to search for them. We've got to make sure that we are including a diverse pool of candidates in the mix. So, you know, and I don't say, oh, gosh, okay, you can't find them. Okay, that's it. Well, no, we got to put a little more effort behind it. Maybe the search is going to take a little bit longer, but we can certainly find some out there.
Sure. Great answer.
And you do hear that. You do hear that, Brian.
There's no doubt in my mind about that. Technology. How does technology affect a more diverse workforce or a diversity strategy? Positive, negative.
You know, and this is one area that I wish I was just, if I could go back to school again, I would want to do something that was much more technically focused. But I'll give you an example. I worked with a company a few years back, and the turnover, it was a manufacturing company, very high turnover with entry-level employees. Now, all of our turnover was very focused in a particular demographic. We had white males between the age of 21 and 34 who were staying less than 6 to 8 months. And I think if we had better technology, if we had a better tool that we were using at the time, we would have seen that earlier, and we could have asked some hard questions, you know, why is this happening? What is it about either our onboarding, our message, that is driving this particular group so consistently out of the organization? Now, on the flip side of that, when we get our AAP results, we see that we have disparate impacts because we had a higher hiring of that same demographic. Well, you know, that looked a little strange because our workforce did not reflect that at all. So, you know, I think initially the thought of maybe the hiring group was, you know, we need to kind of balance this out some, which is good. But whatever that message was, there was some disconnect because the people weren't staying. And I think if we had better technology at that time, or if we could kind of drill down and look at things a little more closely, we would have seen that and could have maybe come up with some solutions before it got so far out of hand. So I think technology can be very helpful in organizing our data, because you get caught up in your day-to-day, and it's great to get a quick report, and you can kind of get a snapshot of these things so that you can develop plans to kind of rectify them. So I'm very excited about what's happening in HR from a technological standpoint, and it's just so exciting to see, you know, people with different skill sets and approaches to problems even entering HR. So I think we're going to start seeing some real advances and kind of a change in the focus of what HR really is, just because of that technical aspect and the technical talent that's entering the industry.
Great. Well, when we talk about diversity, there is another word that is totally attached to that, this diversity, that is inclusion, right? So, So when we talk about, you know, hire for inclusion, what do you see leaders should be doing when it comes to creating an inclusive culture?
You know, when I think about inclusion, I know we often pair it with diversity, but I really see that more for our entire workforce. We do need to find ways that people feel to truly be a part of the organization. And when all employees understand the role they play in the big picture, I think you get a much more inclusive workforce. And when they're given opportunities to, like I said before, you know, represent the organization. Let's not just let managers be the one out maybe, you know, ringing the Salvation Army bell or going to the local elementary school for field day or, you know, whatever things your organization, you know, participates in. Let's let some of those other employees who maybe aren't always seen do that and really champion the organization. And I think that's a great way to include our entire workforce. You know, find things that interest all those employees and what parts of the community they'd like to impact and find ways that they can be the voice for the company and, you know, be brand ambassadors and let the people in their very focused neighborhood see what their company is doing. So for inclusion, I think it's very important that we, you know, give employees an opportunity to champion the organization they work for, to be an extension of that organization in their own community.
Right. Well, you know, when we talk about diversity or inclusion, you know, we generally know the theoretical part of it, and then we know how to make it happen or how to, you know, do it in a practical sense. But when it comes to HR, yes, we need to look at a little bit of the compliance aspect of it. We need to look at the legality aspect of it. So what do you think HR professionals should take care of when it comes to the legality of hiring for diversity? Is there any particular rules or any particular you know, laws that recently has come up that you wanted to highlight or something that you wanted to add on?
I don't want to, you know, diminish the compliant piece of it. Of course, we have to, you know, make sure our policies are not discriminatory and that we do, you know, look for ways to include all people in our applicant process. So, yeah, HR is going to have a very different stance as to, you know, managing the diversity piece, and we definitely have to do that. I think, like I said before, you know, looking for avenues for more diverse candidates, making sure that when training opportunities present themselves that are going to position candidates for future opportunities, that we make sure that we, you know, include our diverse talent that's within the organization already. So those kind of things are really going to be important. We need to make sure that our managers understand the importance of diversity and that, you know, I think the larger companies that I've worked for have all included diversity and inclusion as one of the core competencies for their managing team or their management team. But when you really ask them, okay, well, what is valuing diversity look like? When you get ready to complete that performance management piece, what exactly is it that we're hoping to measure? And, you know, by asking those questions, we can develop a real plan. You know, are you identifying talent on your team that is ready to be developed for the next opportunity? Are you resolving conflicts? Are you addressing issues when you see them? Are you, you know, handling situations when they arise before they blow up out of control? So, you know, those type of things HR can do. We can make sure we spend some time with the managers that struggle with that. If there's a particular department that has an issue, you know, let's deal with it. So HR can add, you know, valuable support to driving these diversity strategies, but we do need to make sure that the top leadership embraces it and that they really, really push it from a business standpoint.
Danielle, are there any trends in HR or talent that you see that are getting you more excited than others currently?
Trends that are getting me more excited. Well, trends specifically in HR. I like the fact that we are getting I like the idea that HR is looking outside of just maybe psychology and HR management degrees for talent in the HR department. I like that we're expanding our skill set. That we are getting, that we have people with varied backgrounds that are coming into HR. I like that a lot. Of course, with the way we're moving to a much more social workforce, I do like the fact that the way that we're communicating and interacting with our teams is evolving. I think we're going to have to become much more social in our communications as we move forward. And I think that may pose some challenges, but I see it as something that's pretty exciting.
Well, good. Great. And also a great segue to where does social change the game up a little bit, or does it at all? Is it overplayed?
Well, I'll tell you my experience with social. About 5 years ago, you know, I said, well, I'll start a Twitter account. I did, you know, but I did not really use the social platforms, not at all like I'm using them now, and I'm really not totally maximizing them now. But I think social has completely changed the game, and I think it's something HR really has to embrace, because one of the key things that HR has to handle is communication. So I think in maybe the next 5 or 10 years, the workforce is going to be far more social in their communication. So the flyers and the letters home and all these kind of communications that we've done in the past are going to be very archaic. So I think social has, for me, it's connected me with a very diverse pool of people who are HR, you know, I just think really heavyweights that have forced me to look at things very differently, have made me kind of challenge and stretch. So I think social is very important, and it's connected me with so many people who have, you know, best practices or things that they've already seen or done, who offer a different approach to problems, and you can just reach out to them so are going to expect it. They're going to want real-time answers. They're not going to want to wait for the return phone call and, you know, it may be 2 or 3 days, especially in these workplaces that operate 24 hours a day. You know, if by the time I get back to it or I'm back at my desk, it's 2 or 3 days later. And that's just not going to be acceptable for a workforce that is accustomed to getting information very, very quickly. So social, we're definitely moving in a different direction, and I think it's very important. And I think it's great, and I think HR is going to have to be at the helm of it in driving these communications in the organization.
Well, that's excellent. So where are you going to be at maybe over the next few months that somebody might be able to meet you, talk with you, shake your hand, tell you that you're completely wrong, whatever the case may be?
Yeah, I like those conversations too. In the next few months, hopefully I'll be at the SHRM conference and can meet some people there. Our North Carolina State Conference is in September, and I'll be there as well. That's about the only conferences there. But hopefully if you're in Raleigh or come to North Carolina, maybe we could bump into each other. Beautiful state, great time of year to come to North Carolina.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. So is there anything that my guess is you read quite a bit. And so is there anything you've read recently that you'd like to share or currently reading?
Something that I've read current. And you know what, Brian? I'm at a complete loss. I do read a lot of the blogs. I do. And that's something that social media has enhanced for me. It's, you know, driven me to read a lot more than I'd really read in the past. I can't think of a book that I throw out there right now. So I just try to keep up with the blogs and what a lot of the strong HR voices out there are saying. So I'm looking now closely at this new certification program. So there's a lot of information about that out there. So I'll be reading up on that.
There is definitely a lot in play at the moment around the around HR professional certification, whether it's through the HRCI, Human Resource Certification Institute, or through SHRM, the Professional Association body. So that will be an interesting conversation, and that's probably a good thing for you and a lot of people to take a look at. So all good conversations. So where can people connect with you via virtual, social, everything like that, if you'd share it?
Oh, yeah, please connect with me on Twitter at TheTalentPoolHR. My email address is DanielleRupert@TheTalentPoolHR. And, of course, you can find me on LinkedIn at Danielle Rupert. I'd love to connect with you and hear your thoughts.
Perfect. Well, Danielle, thank you so much for spending lunch with us and our listeners. Folks, we're out of here. Have a good rest of the day.